Welcome to the Deep Dive. Here, we take interesting, sometimes complex source material, and we really dig in to pull out the key knowledge for you. Fast.
Yeah, making it seriously well-informed, quickly.
And today, we're venturing into some pretty deep mathematical territory. We've got a research paper, Regularity and Strict Positivity of Densities for the Nonlinear Stochastic Heat Equations. Authors are Chen, Hu, and Neuillard.
Right. Pure and applied math.
Our goal here is to generate a clear audio overview. We want to break down the main ideas of this work, make it engaging, make it accessible for you.
Exactly. It's not about solving the equations step by step, but more about understanding the nature of the solutions themselves. You know, do they exist in a probabilistic sense? Are they smooth, well-behaved?
What are the odds of them being a certain value? That kind of thing.
Precisely. We're looking at existence, regularity, positivity, especially of the probability density.
Okay, stochastic heat equations. Heat flow is usually predictable, right? So stochastic adds randomness.
You got it. Imagine heat smoothing out, but with random jiggles happening everywhere all the time.
And then nonlinear and fractional, what do they add to the mix?
Well, fractional involves a special operator. It changes how influence is spread. It's not just local diffusion, could be longer range thing. More complex interactions than just nearest neighbors.
Okay.
And nonlinear means the system's evolution isn't just simple proportion. It can depend on the current state, the current temperature, let's say, in a more complicated feedback loop.
So this paper is digging into whether solutions even exist consistently, how smooth they are probabilistically, and if their probability density is positive.
That's the core of it. Existence, smoothness, and positivity of the density. Are certain states possible at all?
So it's like mapping the possibilities.
Yeah, mapping the probabilistic landscape. Imagine tracking, I don't know, contaminant spread maybe. These equations help model that, randomness and complex feedback included.
And they use some heavy-duty math tools for this.
Oh yeah. The main one is Malleavin calculus.
Malleavin calculus. Sounds advanced. What's the basic idea? How does it help here?
Okay, think of regular calculus derivatives tell you how functions change. Malleavin calculus is kind of like calculus for random processes.
Mm-hmm.
It lets you take derivatives with respect to the randomness itself. So you can analyze how that underlying noise affects the solution's properties, like its smoothness, its density.
Right. Okay. So it's a way to handle the randomness mathematically to understand these complex heat equations. What's the actual equation they start with? Equation 1.1?
Yep. Equation 1.1. The stochastic fractional heat equation, or SFHE. You've got a time change term.
Right.
And there's this Riesfeller fractional operator acting on the solution U.
A fractional bit again.
Right. And that's defined using Fourier transforms, equation 1.2. It generalizes the standard Laplacian, the thing that describes normal heat diffusion.
Oh, okay. So depending on some parameters, alpha and delta, it can simplify to the regular heat equation.
Exactly. Alpha is between 1 and 2. Delta has constraints, equation 1.3. So they're looking at a broader class than just standard diffusion.
So fractional means potentially non-local spreading of influence. Got it. What else is in the equation?
Then there's a nonlinear term, which depends on time, space, and the solution you at. That's the feedback part.
Okay.
Equation 1.4 lays out its properties, has to be continuous, differentiable, and yet doesn't grow too fast.
Is there a key example?
Yeah, the parabolic Anderson model is a big one. That's where R is just lambda times U, and you have the standard Laplacian, alpha 2, delta. It actually models a surprising number of things.
Then the randomness.
That comes from the last term.
Yeah.
The nonlinear part is multiplied by WGX, which is space-time white noise.
Space-time white noise, like random kicks everywhere, constantly.
Pretty much. Infinite tiny random impulses at every point in space and time. It's the ultimate source of randomness here.
And how does it all start, the initial condition?
The initial condition at time zero is given by a measure, NUNAC, and this is really important.
A measure, not just like a smooth temperature map to start.
Exactly. It can be much rougher. Think like a single point source of heat that's the Dirac delta measure, much more general than a smooth function.
Wow. Okay.
Equation 1.5 gives the technical conditions this initial measure has to satisfy, depending on that alpha parameter.
Starting with something potentially so spiky, like a measure, must create challenges, right? Why do that?
Well, it's more realistic for certain applications. Things often start very localized or irregular, but yeah, mathematically, it gets tricky.
How so?
As I mentioned near equation 1.6, some standard tools break down. For instance, you might lose the guarantee that the solution's moments, like its average squared value, stay bounded. So they need cleverer techniques.
Okay, so understanding the density of the solution helps manage this probabilistic behavior. What was missing from earlier work that this paper addresses?
Right. People had made progress. Newellart and Corsardanians showed smooth densities for some SBDEs, but often needed zero initial data. And importantly, that nonlinear term had to be strictly positive.
Which excludes some important models.
Yeah, like cases where, oh, it could be zero sometimes. Mueller and Newellart relaxed that condition for the standard stochastic heat equation, which was a big step. But they still needed smoother initial data, not measures.
Okay.
And others looked at densities at multiple points in space, but again, with restrictions on or the initial data.
So this paper is really pushing into the tougher cases. General initial data, maybe zero.
Exactly. The big leaps are handling these measure-valued initial conditions robustly and proving strict positivity of the density in key cases, like the parabolic Anderson model.
Strict positivity, meaning there's some chance, even if tiny, of reaching any possible state within a range.
Pretty much, yeah. It tells you the system has the potential to explore a full range of values.
So what are the main results? The theorems.
They lay out four main theorems. Theorem 1.1 is huge. It gives a necessary and sufficient condition for the solution, USA, to have a smooth density, even with that measure-valued initial data. It generalizes Mueller and Newellart's work to the fractional case.
Necessary and sufficient. That's mathematically very satisfying. You know exactly when it works.
Absolutely. Then theorem 1.2 tackles the joint density.
Mm-hmm.
So the probability of seeing certain values at multiple different points in space simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
This needs an extra condition, a sort of cone condition on how O behaves from below, equation 1.8, and also requires the initial measure to be positive. It actually improves the smoothness results from prior work too.
So understanding correlations across space.
Exactly. Theorem 1.3 offers related results, extending work by Bali and Pardue. It handles the general initial data and includes the parabolic Anderson model without needing that cone condition from 1.2.
But there's a trade-off.
Yeah. The conclusion is slightly weaker. The density result holds mainly where that nonlinear term is non-zero.
Okay. And the last one, theorem 1.4.
This one focuses on strict positivity. It shows that if only depends on the solution itself, not explicitly on time or space, and has bounded derivatives, then the density is strictly positive.
And this works even with the measure-valued initial data.
Yes, at least at what they call proper points.
Yeah.
Where the initial measure has a bounded density. This is a really significant result for things like the parabolic Anderson model.
Okay, so proving strict positivity gives a much richer picture. What were the key tools again? You mentioned Malleavian calculus.
Right, that's the main engine. They use it to analyze the smoothness of the solution as a random variable. The properties of the Malleavian matrix are crucial. Theorem 2.2 connects this matrix to whether you get a density and how smooth it is.
So it's like a test for probabilistic smoothness using this special calculus.
That's a good way to put it. But they also need another key ingredient, proving that solutions to a related equation have negative moments.
Negative moments. What does that mean intuitively?
It's a way to control how small the solution can get, essentially bounding it away from zero in a probabilistic sense. Theorem 1.5 gives conditions for this. It's particularly important when you have those potentially difficult initial measures.
And how do they prove that?
They use a stopping time argument, which they note is an improvement on earlier methods, Mark 3.2.
Stopping times, looking at random events happening.
Yeah, it's a technique from probability theory that lets you analyze random processes more flexibly, which is needed here because of the general initial data.
Makes sense. Any other key pieces?
The fundamental solution, GTX, is vital. That's basically the solution to the equation without the nonlinearity and the noise. It's like the basic building block.
Uh-huh.
Its properties, like how it scales, equation 2.2, and the bounds on its size, equation 2.3, are used throughout the analysis. It's related to stable probability distributions, often bell-shaped, but potentially with heavier tails than a Gaussian.
Wow, okay. It definitely sounds like a complex construction using several advanced tools. How did they structure the paper to present all this?
It's quite logically laid out. Intro sets the stage and states the main theorems. Chapter 2 covers preliminaries Malleavian calculus, the fundamental solution. Chapter 3 is dedicated to those negative moment bounds. Chapters 4 and 5 handle more technical moment estimates and Malleavian derivatives. Then Chapter 6 proves theorem 1.1 density at a single point. Chapter 7 does the joint density, theorems 1.2 and 1.3. Chapter 8 proves the strict positivity, theorem 1.4. And there's an appendix for some supporting details.
Very thorough. Okay, so let's synthesize. If we boil this deep dive down, What are the absolute key takeaways for our listener?
I'd say the big things are, one, this paper really pushes the boundaries for understanding these stochastic fractional heat equations, especially when you start with messy measure-valued initial conditions.
Which is important for real-world modeling.
Exactly. And two, it showcases the power of Mellevin calculus combined with careful analysis like these negative moment bounds to rigorously establish properties like existence, smoothness, and importantly, strict positivity of the solution's probability density. It gives us a much deeper understanding of models like the parabolic Anderson model.
So for you, the listener, trying to get a handle on this, the aha moments might be realizing why those general initial conditions matter.
Right, they open up modeling possibilities.
And appreciating how these sophisticated math tools like Mellevin calculus allow us to actually probe the probabilistic nature of these complex random systems.
Yeah, it's seeing how abstract math tackles concrete problems about randomness and dynamics.
This definitely sparks some curiosity. If someone wanted to explore further, what directions could they take?
Well, you could definitely dive deeper into Mellevin calculus itself, at the whole field, or look into applications of stochastic PDEs in physics, biology, finance. See where these kinds of equations pop up.
Right.
Investigating stable distributions, which connect to that fundamental solution G, could also be interesting. They appear in lots of areas beyond just this paper.
So let's leave you with this thought. When we understand the fundamental probabilistic behavior of complex systems like these, knowing whether solutions exist, are smooth, and can potentially reach any state, how does that change our ability to model, maybe even predict, phenomena in the real world that are full of randomness and intricate feedback? It really highlights how even very theoretical math can connect back to understanding the world.
A really powerful connection.
Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.